I'm Helly, and welcome to Growth in Progress, the podcast where we have open and honest conversations about things that aren't usually discussed, but that can help us all to grow.
In each episode, we spend some time catching up. We share a recommendation of something we've really enjoyed using, reading, listening to, or watching. And then we go on to discuss a topic that we think is really relevant to the things that are going on right now and the sorts of things a lot of people might be thinking about but aren't necessarily having the conversation about. How are you doing? It is bonus day. Have you seen the episode of Modern Family where they talk about bonus day?
No, I've never really watched Modern Family. Like, I've seen a few episodes, but not like
Oh.
religiously watched it.
Okay, I love Modern Family. I can't believe you've never watched it. There's an episode where it is February 29th and they refer to it as like bonus day and you should make the most of it and do something you wouldn't normally do. And today, as we're recording, it's February 29th. So it's basically
Well,
leap year day. So
I did the well. I'm not going to say I did the classic last night, but when it was past midnight, I like proposed to Taylor because you know it's the day where you're supposed to be able to propose, even though in theory you can actually propose any time. I was like, "Will you marry
oh my God, I'm so gonna do that today. That's so
me?"
funny. Oh, and he'll be like, yeah, I asked you first. You said yes.
Am I just following up? I like to do a secondary check.
I just want to be part of the action. God.
It's
Look, I'm an
my
anxious
turn
person. I need constant reassurance. Do you still really want
now.
to marry me? I keep thinking, like, what if Alex changes his mind? Like, would he have to ask for the ring back?
I mean, I've read some stuff like this on Reddit, and it seems pretty divided because some people are like, well, it's a gift. So no, the general consensus will be if it's a gift to you, like you don't ask for gifts back for people. But then equally, some people have asked for it back because obviously it can be a big investment. And yeah, I don't actually know what the etiquette is.
I feel like
I haven't really thought about it.
if I ended the engagement, I would give it back because like that's my fault. I feel like if you're not the one that ends the engagement and you are not at fault, you
Yeah.
should get it regardless of who you are. Because you
Yeah,
can
because if you're the
sell
one ending it, then I feel like surely you just, why would you want to keep it anyway? If you're the one
it.
ending the relationship, then
Yeah. Yeah.
this is a weird conversation for us to both be having.
First thing in the morning. Anyway, I actually have something I want to discuss with you. I saw it on the news. Well, I say the news. It was the context on BBC News, which is one of my favourite subsections of the news because Christian Fraser is excellent. And he basically is mildly like, I would say almost like mildly trolly to his guests. Like he'll just ask the blunt questions. I love it. But they were talking about how Monica Lewinsky is the new face of Reformation, the clothing brand.
Oh, that's interesting.
And she's also like protesting about voter reform or something. But she's the new face of Reformation. The image shots are brilliant. It is her in a red dress, which in itself is iconic from like when she wore the red dress and all the pap photos from that. And I just thought it's so interesting. It's on Reformation's homepage if you go and look at it. And I really love that like, there was an article in The Independent about it, and the headline was like, actually, let me find the headline because I was like, good God. There we go, it's loading. It says, Monica Lewinsky from slut-shamed White House intern to fronting fashion's hottest brand. She has been chosen for the fashion brand Reformation's campaign to urge people to vote in the 2024 US elections. I hate that they call out that she was slut-shamed, although that is exactly what happened. And I love that. I mean, A, from a fashion and a image point of view, like, they're brilliant shots. Like, look at that shot of her in the suit. Like, she just looks great.
It's amazing. However, it's also giving the Apprentice vibes.
Oh my God. Well, now you've said that I can't unsee it. But it's kind of like, I love that there's a part of her like reclaiming the narrative there. Like, she was so
100%.
villainized and she did nothing wrong. Like,
I've never even heard of this clothing brand. This is really cool.
Reformation. I feel like Reformation's a bit of you.
No,
They
I'm
are.
not shocked. regularly for a very long time. So,
They are
no.
like, they're very, very big in the US. They do now ship to the UK. They've got a great store in New York on, is it, either Madison or Fifth. And it's so nice. Like, you walk into their store and you're like, I want to move in here, please. It's just down from Ralph
Definitely going
Lauren.
to check that out.
For anyone who's in New York and needs
Love
to
that. I was gonna
get
say, I love that you know that
Google,
exact reference.
it is very, very specific, like, recommendation. But I thought it was so interesting that they've picked Monica Lewinsky. And I also kind of loved it of like, she's like, get out and vote. And like, because it's a talking point. I feel like regardless of her relevancy to voter registration, her being part of it is really like, feels quite zeitgeisty in that reclaiming your story feels like it's becoming such a bigger thing. Like, we saw it so much with Pamela Anderson last year. And
Yeah,
so
that's
many other
true.
people, like people from the 90s who had their story told, but they didn't tell their story.
Because during that time, especially for women, like the narrative was very much out of their control
Yeah.
of whatever they were doing. Because, like, I mean, it is a very clever PR move. Like, if any brand that she became the face of would have been talked about, whatever it was, whether it was fashion, whether it was beauty, whether it was something completely unrelated, like they could have given her own like TV show or whatever, like it would have
Yeah.
always been spoken about. But then I also think it's a very smart move on her part to have aligned it with like this political side of it as well. I think that's clever.
Yeah, and I love the juxtaposition of like politics and fashion, which so often don't get airtime together in a credible way. She's gone, yes, you can want both. You can be part of both. Like, we are multifaceted people, and that's so important.
What was that? There was a TV program that spoke about that and like how women in the public eye are always asked like what they're wearing and men never are. But then the huge amount of work that goes in behind the scenes for men and women to choose what they're wearing and how like the subtle cues of the fashion choices that they make kind of play into how they're perceived by people. I can't remember
Oh
what
my
that was, and it
God.
was saying like,
I've not seen
is
that, but
that?
that's so me. Like, that is, I need to watch that. That's a bit of me entirely.
I'm really gonna have to. It was definitely a couple of years ago. I'm re really gonna have to rack my brain for this after we've recorded to remember what it is. But I thought it was so interesting, like how the narrative is in fashion is controlled for both men and women,
Yeah.
but it's only ever spoken about from like, oh, what are you wearing? When it's like a female perspective.
And the work that goes into it, you're right, is absolutely insane. Like,
Yeah, it's not
another
like a regular
hour.
person just grabbing something out of their wardrobe in the morning. Like they have their own like stylist, their own dress, like everything is
Even like the relationships that have
thought
been
about and
cultivated.
orchestrated.
Yeah, like the relationships that are cultivated with fashion houses over years and years and years to get to a point where they're allowed to wear that is like insane. Oh. Anyway, that's our little discussion, pop culture, what's going on in the world discussion. Do you want to share your recommendation?
Yeah, so I'm actually doing two recommendations because they are two true crime shows that are on Netflix, and I feel a bit weird like recommending two true crime things in a row. I don't know why. I feel like there's a bit of a weird association with true crime now. However, I do love it. But they're both on Netflix. One is called American Nightmare, and the other one is called Lover, Stalker, Killer.
Oh God, don't.
So the American Nightmare is.
I can't watch either of these because I found the synopsis of them both so stressful. Alex wanted to watch them and I was like, no, I can't.
Weren't that stressful, to be fair. I thought they were both very interesting because they commented on a much wider theme. American Nightmare was very much a focus on like media portrayal of especially female victims, and then Lover, Stalker, Killer, obviously stalking, and both had very different takes of how the police dealt with the issue.
Oh,
So
interesting.
American Nightmare is a three-part documentary. And it's about a couple who in 2015 were attacked in their own home during the night, and the woman, Denise, is kidnapped. Obviously, police looked to her partner as the main suspect, thinking that he's somehow involved. The media ended up like whipping this story into this spectacle. saying that it would, like, I'm not gonna, I don't know if it gives it away because it tells you in the first episode. A very famous movie came out in 2015, and the media basically says that it's the real life version of that movie.
Okay, I've watched this because there's another one on Netflix. I've seen this and it's on my
Oh.
list of things to recommend. I've got it
American
crossed.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I just thought it was so interesting, like the police incompetence and how they were basically guided by the media and like the prejudice that they had. If it wasn't for that one female officer who decided to investigate further,
Yeah.
like the truth would probably not have come out. And there was a massive smear campaign against them. Like, I just thought it was a really,
Horrendous.
because the first episode you think it's the guy, then the next episode you think it's something else, and then the final episode is when the actual truth comes out. But it just makes you question media coverage and like how convinced you are that by the story that the media peddles, and it's not what you think it is at all.
That was so interesting to me because I do think, and we've said it before, Netflix have a great way of producing a documentary where it takes you on that journey and it very much takes you through those different mindsets. What also really struck me is how the second that they had proof that it wasn't like a hoax and it wasn't him and it wasn't her, anything like that, the media were almost like, no. Like it didn't
Yeah, just
fit the
not interested.
narrative that had been created. And so no one was interested. And I don't feel like the focus was on how the criminal was the bad person. The media focused more on how the victims were the bad people. And I find that so, like, even after the fact, it's very confusing. Fronting.
Yeah, definitely. And then by contrast, the other one, Lover, Stalker, Killer, it's just a one like standalone documentary. It's an hour and a half long. It's about a man in the US who, him and his partner have split up, but they're on good terms, and he decides to move to the town that she's moved to so he can still stay close to his kids. So he decides when he's there, obviously he doesn't know anyone, he starts online dating. And he meets this woman who, yeah, becomes obsessed with him basically and takes it to the absolute extreme. That is super interesting because obviously it looks like the long term, like years long term impact of stalking, but it's from a male perspective, and the police take it really seriously. Like they really do a lot to support him and to protect, because then the woman then goes after his ex and his kids. Like so
I did
many other
that.
people get involved in it, and it's shocking, but that's also really interesting. And then such a contrast between how the police reacted in the American Nightmare one. But yeah, that's why I wanted to recommend the two together, because they're very, very different reactions from police, I guess.
I can't remember the one I was thinking of then that is not American Nightmare, but another one that was to do with stalking, and it really stressed me out, and I was like, I can't watch that. I need to actually look up the name of what I'm going to recommend because, in classic me style, I've watched the documentary and I've like written on my list the documentary about crack. That's not what it's called. Bear with me because that does not sound like a compelling recommendation and I understand that. We sat down. So, we, for context, and I think this context is important, we have watched Griselda and all of Narcos this year so far. I never watched Narcos when it came out, but I'm now fascinated by the whole drug industry, I guess, and the impacts on society. And in Griselda, there's a part where she smokes crack. And I said to Alex, what is the difference between crack and powdered cocaine? This documentary, right, is called Crack, Cocaine, Corruption and Conspiracy on Netflix. It's a couple of years old, but I would recommend watching it because what it looks at is the impact of crack cocaine, but specifically on inner city communities in the 1980s. And as a subsection of that, the impact had on the Black and Latina communities, and how essentially the boom of the powdered cocaine industry in the 80s meant that people could go and buy powdered cocaine. They could kind of create the crack from that, sell the crack, and make a great profit. So it's like a subsection, but to create the crack was extremely cheap. So it could be sold extremely cheaply because of the process that happens when you split the one of the molecules off to create crack. Clearly, I'm not a scientist. It is more addictive than traditional powdered cocaine. So you're giving people very cheap, very addictive, very mind-altering drugs in a very accessible way. And it's a really, for a start, it's quite sad. I would say that it does really tackle issues of like poverty and particularly the way that Black women were portrayed with crack and the whole rise of quote unquote the crack babies and how the media really kind of portrayed the idea that there were these women who were doing crack when they were pregnant, their babies were being born as cocaine addicts. Like, there was no kind of compassion for what drove these women to this point. And in addition to that, the science wasn't there. It was like what the media were reporting. It was like they were reporting like one in four like babies were crack babies, quote unquote. Like that's the term they use.
Sure.
It was like less than 2%. Like
What?
similar to what we've just said about the way the media portrays something, the way that it was reported in the media versus how it actually was reported, what actually was happening, why there was such a epidemic within inner city communities, particularly Black and Hispanic communities, all those factors were ignored. Like it was completely like, why would like we're going to ignore the fact that people are really desperate and in horrendous situations and might want to escape that. We're going to ignore the fact that they had their first hit thinking, oh, cool, I'll get a high from it. And then after that, they can never reach that high again. If you're only paying a few dollars to try and get that hit, you're going to keep trying to get it. And they were telling stories of people who were like, I will sell crack to my own mother because she's going to get it from somewhere and I may as well make the profit. Like, really awful things.
Oh my
But
God.
within the documentary, they interview law enforcement, they interview lawyers, they interview former drug dealers and people who kind of led these organizations. And their kind of remorse and why they did it. And it's really interesting to see them speak so candidly about how they got into it. And I think it's really important when we look at things like addiction, when we look at things like poverty, we look at the actions people take when they're desperate. We have that whole picture because that isn't the picture that the media give us. It's crack. It's these people are evil. These people, something wrong with them. We need to be protected from them. But actually, it's a result of us not protecting them. It's a heavy watch, but I would really recommend it. I also think it's very important when you're consuming content like Narcos to see the other side of it and the reality for what actually happened, because, there's a reality behind the kind of glamorous quote unquote stories.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because we often put the National Geographic smugglers on like in the background and we'll watch it. And it's mostly like it's in the US, like mostly at the Mexican border or Puerto Rico or coming into like Miami, basically all of like the major US borders. And so often when they have like they'll catch a car bringing drugs over, and it's often, so often, a woman who is through whatever circumstances, she's either Hispanic, she's Black. She has young children. She's a single mum. There is a very like specific identity that a lot of these people have. And I will say the program does a really good job of saying and showing like the people that are doing this are desperate. These are not the people that we're trying to capture. And a lot of the time you'll see, oh, they got a probation order or they got a suspended sentence because yes, they've just smuggled 10 kilos of cocaine into the US. They're doing it because they're desperate because of the situation that they're in. Like, that's not the people that they're trying to catch. They're trying to catch the cartel big guys, the dealers, the masterminds behind the whole thing. And I do think that's such an important bit of context.
Also, like 10 kilos is not what's fueling a cocaine problem. Do you know what I mean? Like on a
Yeah.
like a national level. That's not how it works. So, yeah, very interesting, very eye-opening, and a good reminder of like media distortion, shall we say. Right.
Shall we move on to this week's topic?
Yes. So, this week we want to have a conversation about nostalgia, but specifically how it's very easy to make decisions that are based on nostalgia, things you thought in the past, things you used to enjoy, even if they might not be right for you now. And we often see that thing flying around the internet of the you of 5 years ago was dreaming of what you have now. And I think that's a really good thing to keep you like grateful and practice gratitude and all of that. But equally, it's kind of a double-edged sword because I think if you're not careful, that mindset can make you make decisions that are no longer right for you.
Yeah, I really think nostalgia is not a good lens for making decisions through. I think it can really, one, it can really warp what you think is good for you and what you think will make you happy. But then also, I think it can be very unhelpful in keeping you on like a one track on a journey. Like, oh, 5 years ago, I thought that this was what I wanted to do. So this is absolutely what I have to do. The reality is you're not the person that you were 5 years ago. So to me, making it then ends up distracting you by what old you might have wanted in the past, which is most likely not the same thing or not the right thing that is good for you or would serve you now.
And I think it also completely, it's very comforting sometimes to look back at what you wanted and be like, oh, but I wanted that. And I always think about how we said that. As soon as we graduated, we wanted to move to London. I would work in beauty PR. You would work in publishing. We'd have our little flat. We would adopt a cat from Battersea Cat Home. And our lives didn't take that direction for so many reasons. But I think for so many reasons, our lives didn't take those directions. And there was almost like a process of us having to accept that. Because I would say from the age of like 21 till about 23, 24, it kind of wasn't off the table that we would do that. But it also wasn't really a realistic thing for us to do because our situations had changed, our career aspirations had changed, our priorities had changed. And I remember really vividly thinking, like, oh, that's not going to happen now. And actually, the decisions I actually have to make, the right decisions I have to make for myself now, make it look completely different to what I thought it would be. And that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I went through a period of realizing the move to London and the dream careers and the rescue cat wasn't going to don't want to say mourning because I feel like that's way too dramatic, but feeling very sad that that wasn't what happened. But then at the same time, I think this is the real danger you get with nostalgia is because you're looking at something through the lens of like how things were. We do it all the time. We look back on our early 20s and we're like, they were the best times ever. We reminisce about nights out and sharing a house together. And don't get me wrong, like, how many amazing times were there? Like, all of the times that we all spent together, they were great. But also, we're glossing over the things that weren't great, where we had very low self-esteem and we had no money and we weren't looking after ourselves and we were drinking too much and eating badly and couldn't afford to take care. Like, and we look back and we're like, our 20s were amazing. There was a lot of really shit times in our 20s. And I think you then run the risk of, if you're going to mourn something that you thought was right for you and you're holding on to it, you then become blind to all of the other opportunities and decisions you should be making because you've just got this idealized version of something in your head, which you probably wouldn't have been anyway.
I also think there's a real like link between thinking, oh, but that's what I wanted, that's what I wanted. And accepting not having it isn't a failure. Because I think there was definitely a time when we would have looked at not moving to London and not getting those big jobs in the city and the companies that we specifically wanted to be in as a failure. I don't see that now because I'm like, oh, it wasn't a failure because it just wasn't right. Like it wasn't like, and even if we'd done it and it hadn't worked out, I don't think I would see it now as a failure. But I think at the time, and when you're going through it and when you're having to decide to take a different path, it almost feels disingenuous and like you failed and like you're not honoring your younger self. If you decide to go down a different path, then it's really hard because you have more information now. you know more about yourself. And I think the best antidote to this is to try and keep in really close touch with who you are now. Because who you are now knows more about what is important to you. I mean, the landscape has changed in the past 5 or 6 years massively, like the working landscape, kind of what we expect from jobs from a kind of payment and respect point of view. Like when you think of how many unpaid internships we
Yeah.
did, that I at the time I was like, well,
Just
it's
have to
just
do
what
it.
you've got to do to cut your teeth. And now I'm like, no, actually, there's a way that you can give people experience, but give them some dignity and respect as well. And I would much rather hold that view I have now than the view I had when I was 20, 21. But I guess I'm saying it's like, it's weird to see all the puzzle pieces shift and suddenly not make the picture that you thought it was going to make.
Which is inevitable. Like, that's always going to happen as you go through life anyway. I do think the danger is allowing a younger version of you to make decisions that are big decisions for you now, or having, like, letting nostalgia make decisions for you, because they're not the same. Like, they might be a decision that 21-year-old you made, but not 30-year-old you. And I mean, like, a really classic example is, I always think, imagine if we had gone to London, I'm sure it would have been amazing. But then the pandemic hit. I'm like, what would have happened to us living in London, living in the city? Like, I just think about what, not that my pandemic experience was fun, not that anyone's really was, but the differences that there would have been, and things like that. I mean, that's a very extreme example of you can't predict what's going to happen, but that's how much life can change.
That wasn't what I thought you were going to say. Because if we had moved to London, you wouldn't have just like left your job and gone
I would
traveling.
have
You
met
wouldn't have met
Taylor.
Taylor.
It's wild.
The entire trajectory of the life you're on would be different.
This is like that whole,
How
makes me
wild is
think
that?
of, is it in Doctor Strange, where it visualizes in the multiverse, like the decisions you make and everyone you make splits off, and that's a different universe in the multiverse. I still always think of decisions exactly like that. Like, you're on a path and I make the decision to move to London, or I make the decision to stay at the job that I'm in, and it's split off in two completely different directions. Then I make the decision to leave that job, or I make the de you could have stayed at that job. They were just moving to another provider. Could have stayed and never gone on that trip. I went on the trip and met Taylor. Like, there's so many different split off points that's why making decisions with nostalgia is just so dangerous, because you've made so many other decisions between you and between where you are now and where you were when you were 20. But that's why it could just never fit in the exact same way that you imagined.
Okay, so I have two thoughts. One, have you seen that movie on Netflix about like this thing where she's 21 and she takes a pregnancy test and the movie splits down the middle and then it shows the reality if she's pregnant and the reality if she's not? It's quite cheesy. It's a very light bubblegummy movie. It talks about this. I think you'd find it really interesting. I'll
There's a
find the
Taylor
name and put it in the
Jenkins
show
Reid
notes. It's
book
like,
that's similar, and I've not read it, but it's on my wish list. And it's about her meeting a guy in a bar, and it's if she chooses to leave and she
yes,
doesn't,
I
and the
want to
two
read that.
different versions of. I've not read it, but I was intrigued by it for the same reason.
I tell a lot of people yours and Taylor's love story. It comes off in conversation, as it does. And it is magical and it's really special. And I think the reason people love it is the perfect example of like, what is it, kismet and serendipity, and you took a slightly different path. Like you kind of nudged your life in one direction and it changed everything. And it's not what you ever would have expected and not ever what you had planned for. And I think it resonates with a lot of people for a lot of reasons, but it is that thing of like, take a chance, take an opportunity. It will kind of, you don't know what's on the other side of it. And I think when you're leading with nostalgia and thinking of what you used to want, you almost have blinkers on. Like you don't see all the potential. You don't see all the opportunities. You don't see all the great things that could happen because you only know what is within the realm of what you've seen before. Like you only know what's within the realm of possible from your perspective, but there is so much more. And if you could see the great things that will come, I think we'd all be more willing to kind of step away from leading with what younger us would have
Yeah, I
wanted.
feel like the classic example of this that we've spoken about before is how we are both now in careers that just didn't even really exist when we were at school or when we were going into university. And if you'd have asked me what I wanted to be when I first went to uni, I can't even remember what I would have said, to be honest. It might have even been like teacher.
In publishing. I feel like you would have said you wanted to be in
No, but
publishing.
I didn't.
No, lawyer. Didn't
I wanted to be a
you
lawyer
want
when I was at school, and then I did a load of law stuff and realized that I hated it, but it was still an option in my first year. I was like, maybe I'll do a law conversion course and I'll go and study law. And
be
there
a lawyer?
was a
Yes.
lot of different things, but it was never this and what I thought it would be. And then the same with your career, like the area that you work in didn't even exist as a thing. Like the career path that you followed was just not even a option that was on the table because it wasn't
Yeah.
something that was even relevant or part of the industry yet. And I think that's such a
Yeah, it just wasn't really like a relevant thing to be thinking about like 15 years ago. So
I also feel like a
it's
really
kind
important bit
of.
of context in this conversation is we came across this topic because we were talking about Vicky McClure's daytime nightclub, where she's launched this club in
Yeah.
Nottingham for people in their 30s, so they can go to the club, have a dance, have a drink, and it's like midday till 4 p.m. or 6 p.m. or something like that, so you can be home at a decent time and get a good night's sleep. And I also feel like that's just a really good point of, okay, I look back on clubbing and nostalgia in my 20s. I don't ever want to do it again. It doesn't mean I can't find a new way to do those things that I
No.
used to enjoy. And I think that's another good point about
Yeah.
nostalgia. It doesn't mean that part of your life is over and you can never enjoy anything from it again. It just means you find a different way of doing stuff.
Yeah, like now, like we had a big group of friends from uni come down in the winter, in the autumn, and we had like a bonfire and we drank red wine around the fire. 10 years ago, it would be a night out, we'll all go back to our uni together. None of us wanted that. We wanted, we were all in bed by 10 p.m. We played a card game, had red wine, took the dogs for a walk. It was lovely. We still got the joy and the nostalgia of being together. It was just in a way that was far more authentic to who we are now.
Think it's lovely, and I do want to go to the daytime nightclub.
Yes, can we do that, please? Can we get a
She's
date in
open
when you're
more
back in the
dates in
UK? Oh
Nottingham, so it's a sign.
my God. Right, okay, we're going to go look at that right now, and wrap up this episode because I feel like that leaves it in a nice little spot. If you have enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe or follow or give us a like on whatever platform you're on because it really helps us reach more people and share it with your friends, family, anyone else who you think might enjoy this or any of our other conversations. And we will be back next week with another episode. Head over to our Instagram as well, hit follow because we've got some really exciting stuff coming up in a couple of weeks for our 200th episode. And we'll be doing a few little sneak peeks and sign up things over there. So be sure to be following us on there. It's Growth and Progress Pod, so that you can be one of the first to see. I'm really excited.
So excited. We'll be back next week. Bye.
Yes, see you later. Bye.